When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
We're heading to northeastern Marlborough with Cosmo Kentish Barnes. He's with Hazley McDonald from Te Pa Wines.
We're down here at the White O Pa, some will call it the White O Bar, and where we are today is sitting outside the original White O Pa school, where my father went as a young kid, and it closed down. Look, I can't remember when it closed down, but it closed down some time ago, and it remains our marae and our community hub for this area and for those families that are from here.
Yes, and you were saying just before that you used to have a lot of family members that lived down this road.
Yeah, this whole road was just once full of all my extended family and my close family. Right next door to where we are was where my grandfather lived and farmed all this area, and that's where he brought up his 21 children. Right here, and so, you know, they all lived and breathed the White O Pa, and yeah, you know, this is where we are and where we farm today.
And your ancestors actually landed their waka not too far from here.
Yeah, right at the White O Pa there. They landed there, you know, over 800 years ago and walked up the beach and walked into paradise. So yeah, it's a pretty special place.
Mm. Now we're looking at some farmland in front of us. What is the soil like here?
So where we are now, is the soil is very rich, silty, loamy soils. And, you know, as a kid growing up, we used to plant, you know, multiple acres of potatoes and cereal crops and vegetable crops, corn and peas. And we could grow them without the assistance of irrigation. It was all naturally done, as well as We never used fertilisers growing up. The soil's so good here. And out there today is, we're making a bit of hay today. So we're still, you know, got our traditional farming practices going, raising beef and making hay and various other crops that we still put in alongside our vineyard operation.
Yeah, we can see that vineyards beyond the paddocks, and beyond them are the bush-clad mountains.
Yeah, well, that's, looking north to the Richmond Ranges, so very lush bush over there, bit of forestry, but, you know, on the valley floor here, 20 years ago, that was just all farmland. And as time's gone on in the wine industry, as people found out, these were the better soils to be in for Sauvignon Blanc. And now, as you can see, the big green carpet is spreading across the plains. So there's very little land in Marlborough that's not got vines in it.
Mm. What was your childhood like here?
At the time, you know, like every kid, I guess, you know, you thought you had the hardest childhood. But when we look back now, we had the best childhood. And we had all our cousins up and down this road. We worked every day after school on the farm. If it was digging potatoes, you know, dairy, beef, there was always a job. And at that time, you know, our hands were tied behind our backs. But, you know, I think we realised that it was the making of a lot of us.
Mm. Yeah. So your folks had a dairy farm, and then did they switch to growing potatoes?
So my grandfather, you know, he did a mixture of dairy farming and growing potatoes. And then my father and his brothers sort of slowly took over the business back in the 70s, I guess. And they were growing potatoes for the local co-op at the time. My father married my mum, and her family owned a few supermarkets in town. And so my dad was one of the ones that sort of broke the mould and started selling direct into supermarkets instead of going through the co-op. And we made anywhere from 3 kilo bags to 20 kilo bags. But then my dad and his brother, 100 metres from us here, converted an old dairy shed. That was my grandfather's dairy shed, and that's when they started to process the potatoes into French fries. And then we started selling those French fries to local fish and chip shops here in town, as well as restaurants. And then that business just grew and grew and grew, and where we were supplying fresh French fries as far as down as Christchurch and probably as far north as up to Taupo.
What were the French fries called?
McDonald fries. It was a really good business. They sold it because I think they just had had enough of that side of the business. So we sold the business, but we kept, we didn't sell the land.
You kept the land.
We kept the land, and, you know, it was back to traditional farming. So we went back into dairy then. We started out milking another 250 cows, but that wasn't good enough. You know, there was two families to feed at that stage, and so we took the numbers the following year. I think it was up to 600, and then the following year up to 800. And so we were milking 800-odd cows in the sort of late 90s.
Mm. And then you went overseas?
Yeah, went away to the USA and, you know, went over there for a six-month working holiday. Ended up staying a lot longer. And
what were you doing over there?
Went over and I was driving trucks interstate. Did that for a bit of a way to see the country and really enjoyed it. And so I came home in the end of 2002. My dad wanted us home to come back onto the farm, and to be fair, I didn't want to be a dairy farmer for the rest of my life, and we agreed to put a few vineyards in. And 2003 we planted our very first vineyards. We put about 150 acres in, and then the following year we stuck another 150 acres in, and then the following year after that we put about another 100 acres in. But everyone used to say you couldn't grow vineyards east of the railway line, State Highway 1. What everyone sort of learned is that that's become the most sought after land for vineyards that everyone wants today. So,
did you know much about grapes or vineyards when you first started planting?
Nothing. We were fortunate enough to work with some really good people in the early parts who gave us a lot of guidance, and we still made mistakes with that. I think what we learned was we went back to the basics on how to grow our crops. We learned that you do need a bit of water with them because we didn't have irrigation, and we learned that it's all about timing on how to interfere. If you see something in the vineyard, you normally, if you react, then you're going to have more of a problem. But if you're proactive around what you're doing, then you don't see no issues throughout the growing season. So we were probably growing for five or six different wineries then.
So you were selling the grapes?
Selling the grapes only. At the same time, I built quite a large contracting business alongside of that in our four vineyards. So we learned how to build our own vineyards. We built all our own, and then we were out building other people's vineyards, and we were harvesting all over Marlborough.
Well, let's head on down the road to your home vineyard and check out the grapes.
Let's do it.
We are driving past lots of your vines now. What's growing in this vineyard here?
These ones right here is our very first plantings. And so all Sauvignon Blanc.
So many years ago, you were sticking those posts in the ground, fixing those wires up, planting the grapes.
Yep, we did the lot. Irrigation in the ground, so I know where everything is down here.
Yep.
Every pot, every post. Done it all, yep. Myself and my father and my brother and, yeah, family. It was what we did.
Well, let's stop here. We've come to the yard and go and have a look at these vines here that are probably, what, three or four weeks off being harvested?
Yep. They're. I'd say this block is going for low alcohol wines that we will make this year for customers in the UK. So probably harvest around the 16th of March.
You've got quite a few buildings here, and in particular one huge shed. Is that where you maintain all the gear?
It houses all our machinery. We've got a few harvesters in there and sprayers, and a couple of mechanics are always fixing gear. And so yeah, it's really important, and we're surrounded by the original sheds here. The one behind us over here used to be our shearing shed growing up, and now we've put it into a smoko shed, lunch room for the guys. And that building next to the grain silos in the early days was my office.
Now, the rows here are about 2 metres high, and between the vines here is a healthy bed of cover crops.
Yeah. Right now, we plant alternative species in there, you know, peas, beans, oats, clovers. Just the one, it helps free up the soil, and two, it helps invigorate root growth for the vines. And so we've noticed massive changes by doing that. We don't have the beautiful bowling green vineyards that we used to have, where it was just all grass. We've gone away from that. We've found that that's not very good for vineyards. And so now with the peas, beans, oats, we let them get high. We crimp roll it down, and then we mulch it back into the soil. You've got to be able to give back to the vineyard so that vines will give back to you. So works well.
And the roots are looking old and gnarly.
Yeah, well, these vines are just over 20 years old now, 20, 21 years old. You know, the life expectancy of Sauvignon vines is probably somewhere between 25 and 30 years. We're starting to see quite a bit of replanting going on in Marlborough now, given that there's some age on vines and, you know, that they do not crop as much as they get older. They start to get a little bit of disease pressure or trunk disease, and so I think what people are sort of finding out is that it's best to replant. We pull all this out. We will do it at some stage, and hopefully that'll be the kids' problem to deal with, not mine. So they're still a bit young, but time they sort of get ready, and if they come in, they'll be doing the replanting. Hopefully the paying too.
How many kids have you got?
5 kids, yeah. 3 girls, 2 boys.
Are they interested in what you're doing here with the vineyard and on the farm?
Yeah, certainly interested, but Julie and I, we push them to get their education. So we've got my oldest now is at university, and the rest are still coming through school. And my oldest son, he's certainly taken an interest in the vineyards and really loves it. And he's had to go back to school, and he wants to be out here, but understands he needs to get an education. This is a, you know, it's a different business now, and hopefully they come in and take over one day and take this business to a different level than what we've achieved. And I sort of went to school to eat lunch and annoy a few teachers, so I didn't last too long. So hopefully those kids will do a bit better than what I did.
How would you describe some of the wines that you produce here? What makes your wines special?
I think what is good here is you get those really big thyle flavours coming through in the lower Wairau, and they're what the customer is after. I wouldn't say we're any more special than everyone else, but I think that the benefits of down here is that we have virtually zero frost risk. We have really good water source here. There's big aquifers under us. I mean, the whole valley comes towards us. As you look west, the elevation is really high. And so if you can imagine all the water from way up in the lakes down underneath the ground, it all comes to us. What goes past us goes to sea. And, you know, we're very lucky to be here.
Where does the Te Pā name come from?
That's a good question. So when I first was thinking about doing my own brand and sitting around as a family trying to come up with names, and we had all sorts of names, and it just sort of clicked and went, well, let's name it after home. This area is known as the Pā. And so we are down the Pā. Te in the Māori language is da. So it's named after home, Te Pā. And so there's a Google image on the label that sort of outlines the different areas of the Pā. You'll see there's in the background of that label, there's like a black line that faintly runs through. That's represent the river that's just over here, which is the Wairau River, which is the lifeline of Marlborough. And then on the front, you'll see it looks like a fish hook. And it has a dual meaning. It looks like the figure eight for the 800 years of our family being here, but also because we're next to the sea, fishing, seafood is a big part of our daily diet. And so it's the represent that. It was actually really simple at the end of the day.
Yeah. And you are also one of the founding members of the Tuku Māori Winemakers Collective. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, I guess in this industry here, there's very few Māori owners, Māori winemakers, and so that was a collective where a few of us got together and said, you know, we need to tell a story of who we are, what we do, and, you know, Māori in general have a sense of we like to do things together. and we do things probably slightly different, and we do that with food. And so those commonalities are really good. They're good to bounce ideas off, and we just share things that we do in the vineyards, as well as our brand stories, our culture. And so that's sort of how we got born. There's many winemaking collectives here, but this is a Māori version, and it's to showcase not only to our peers but to the world that we're here. Indigenous are in with everyone else, and yeah, come and experience it.
Now, shall we head down to the river mouth where your ancestors first landed?
Yeah. So we refer to that as Te Pukehiwi, and that's where the first migration of our people arrived. And yeah, we can go there now and show you what's there.
Is your family still involved in the vineyard?
Just recently, my mum and dad have moved out. They've finally retired, and we've taken over the whole lot. My brother that was with me, he moved into Australia 12 odd years ago, and I have two sisters that are still here, but not involved in the business.
Why have we stopped here, Hazley?
Well, this is to just to show, you know, where the river runs out to sea, being the Waiato Bar. But it's also significant to us as Māori and as local Māori here. This is the land I spoke about before, what we call Te Pukehiwi. So the first landing of Māori to arrive here in the Waiato came here into what we call now Cloudy Bay, up onto the beach, and lived here. So, you know, that was a very big par site over there. Also, in the latter years, my last name's McDonald, Francis McDonald, that came here on these shores. There used to be quite a community, and so he built, there used to be a pub right here on the bar. And so he had that until a big flood came in one day and washed it away.
Is that a protected site?
Yes, it is. It is under protection. At the moment, it's under the Department of Conservation, and we are trying to get that back as an iwi under our control to look after it better than what's been currently going on. So that's a bit of an uphill battle for us at the moment with the department, but hopefully one day they'll see the light, and that'll come back to the original owners.
What a spectacular spot here.
Yeah, it is. It's, as you can see, you know, people are fishing here. They'll be catching karawai and rig fish and whatever else jumps on the hook. And it's, you know, it's quite a lovely area. I mean, we've grown up fishing here, white baiting, and, you know, a big part of the community come down here to get a feed of fish.
There are some people searching for shellfish as well because it's a low tide. And this really is the point where your ancestors came down into the river from the sea.
It is. If you can imagine them arriving here all those years ago, and what a place to arrive to. I mean, all the bounties of the sea, the harbour, cockles and scallops and everything used to be in here, and some of it still is, to the massive Waiato Lagoon in the back there where they had untold amounts of bird life, and they used to hunt moa just over here, run them down off the hills and down this boulder bank, and, you know, slaughter those moas years ago. Also had, you know, the Haast eagle here, the biggest eagle in the world. Through some of the digs that were done over the other side there, we found the remains in a big hangi pit of the Haast eagle, which, you know, there's a replica in Te Papa Museum as to how big those things really were.
And also across there, there's an important archaeological site that contains a burial ground.
Yeah, there is. There's a lot of our people were buried over there. You know, a few decades ago, some, I don't know what you call them, scientists, bloody come explorers, were looking for artefacts over there, and it really upset our family, and some promises were made not to go near the graves, and unbeknown to us, they were in there and they took a heap of them out of their resting place, and that was pretty bad. And so they took them away, they were sold off, they were put into museums. I guess some goods come out of it, some DNA testing was done on some of those bones, and DNA testing on us that are still living here today, and it just shows how far back we go and how we're related to this area and where we've come from through the Pacific. So there's some good things come out of it, but, you know, those that were ahead of my time fought for the return of those remains, those of our people to be brought back here. And 2010, we repatriated 55 of them that Canterbury Museum had in storage and reburied them as close as we can to where they were taken from, given the information that we had. And so that was really, really good. But, you know, some of these museums have still got a lot of our people that they are not releasing yet.
It's an ongoing battle.
It's an ongoing battle, and one day they'll do the right thing and return those people to us to be put back in their rightful place.
Haisley MacDonald from Te Pā Wines, talking to Cosmo at the Wairau Bar, or Te Pokohiwi Okupe in Marlborough.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.